Blog Talk Radio.
What is up, everyone? Welcome to the Cave Show with PLR. This is PLR coming to you live. Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, like we do every single Thursday. Thanks for hanging out with us here on this special start time at 3:30 today. You know how we do this. Cigars and a Cave Show, Sports Talk Radio. Okay, I promise we're not going to talk Suns until basketball season starts again. I make that promise, but we have a little bit more wrap-up today, especially following James Jones' press conference with us, as well as Coach Monty Williams. So on with us today, about a half hour, Gerald Bourget, Suns writer for PHNX, Suns and the co-host of PHNX Pod. So he's going to be hanging out with us a little bit later on. We're going to break down some more Suns stuff, but we got a lot of other things on the docket to talk about today. The Mavs and the Warriors got at it last night, so you know we're going to definitely dip into that, as well as the Celts and the Heat get at it in about a couple of hours, so you know we're definitely going to dip into that as well. Big, big basketball day. Give you some news and some notes around the league as well as we get the show going on. Also, we got some news and notes with baseball. Tiger is back on the links. I know we don't talk a lot of golf, but when Tiger plays, we have to at least mention it. And then we have some heavyweights going at each other. Some big heavyweights. College football and the NIL is starting to turn really ugly. Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban, war of words. We'll get into that and get into thoughts on the NIL. What are you thinking about the NIL? I'll give you mine. Should college players be paid? And even though they are, they're not getting paid by the NCAA, should there be some more regulations? I guess that's the way we'll say it. So we'll get into that as well right here on the Cave Show with PLR. Like I said, we are coming to you live from Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located at 4991 South Alma School. That is Alma School and Chandler Heights. When you come in, let them know that PLR from the Cave Show sent you. They will take 10% off of your cigar purchase. You also can become a member, get you access to the members' lounge, get a locker that backs up to a humidor, and never have to worry about your sticks going bad or anything of that nature. And there's so many amenities back there that'll make you feel right at home. They also do serve adult beverages here. So get your adult beverage on while you're enjoying a fine steak. Now, here's the other part of this school. You don't have to be a member to have a good spot to sit, a good spot to relax, a good spot to enjoy your steak and enjoy your beverage. Now, if you can't make it down here, there are no worries. Just go online to Stogie World, StogieWorld.com. And if you order your sticks early enough in the day, they will ship the exact same day. All this happens right here at Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco. Again, when you come in, make sure you let them know that PLR sent you, and they will take 10% off of your cigar purchase. So there's always been a debate. Should college kids get paid? Athletes. Should they get paid? Should they not get paid? A lot of people say, well, it's part of they're getting a free education. That's enough. Why pay them? They're getting it free. They're getting free food, free room, free board, free education. So why are we kicking down money? Well, there's a way around that now. apologies on pain. The player can sell, the athlete, the student athlete can sell their own and get their own deals done. So you have some college kids making a boatload of money. And I'm going to come down on this like this. Listen, always felt there should be something kicked back to players. This goes way back. But I'm going to give you a quote that I heard from Chris Webber. And then let me say this. I'm going to phrase it, what he said. It sucks when you're playing and you have no money. And you look up in the stands and everyone up there is wearing your jersey. And Nike made money off of it. Michigan made money off it. Everybody made money off of it. But the person who's actually doing the work. I agree with that. For years, they used to have video games, NCAA video games, and players got none of that. It was their image. It was their likeness. It was their everything. Yeah, they didn't put names on the back, but you knew when you played and you played as USC, you knew what number your favorite player was. You knew what number Reggie Bush wore. When you played Nebraska, you knew what number Steve Taylor was. You knew all those numbers. When you played Alabama back in the day, you knew what number Sean Alexander wore. And the likeness was like them. The attributes were like them. Speed, the agility, all the attributes they put on players, it was just like them. So you knew it was them. Without them actually saying their names. It said the same thing with NCAA basketball. You knew what players were. You knew what numbers they wore. It wasn't like they put a different number on the player, changed his nationality, either gave him hair or took his hair away, and let you guess which one it was. And so they stopped being able to do that because they don't own the rights of a person's image. So now kids have the right, they have the right to sell their own name, image, and likeness. The other thing that I've always thought was bullcrap, kids go to colleges generally based on the coach that was in their locker room. Excuse me, that was in their living room. Coach comes in, sits down, recruits your kid. Hey, I'm here for your kid. I'm going to be the adult for your kid. I'm going to be the person that they go to. I'm going to prepare them, whether they're trying to make it to the next level of the sport or they're just trying to come out of college with a degree and be a great citizen going forward further. And you sent your kid to a college generally, not just based on what they could do possibly at the next level, but because that coach came, sat down in your living room, ate your food, and talked to you and made you promises. And then 3 weeks later, they got offered a deal at another college, they got offered a deal to go to the pros, got a better deal, and guess what? They left. They took off. They left. But you know who couldn't leave? The kid couldn't leave. The coach that recruited him, that sat in your house and told you for the next 4 years, kid will be able to come to me, got up and left, and went and made more money. But the kid who's not supposed to get anything was stuck at a place that he didn't want to be at. And I'll tell you, that can hurt a kid, especially athletically. What if your kid was a quarterback, and he ran the wishbone? And I know the wishbone is gone, and I'm showing my age. But the coach that comes in wants a quarterback that runs the pro style. Well, he's not going to play then, is he? He's going to sit on the bench. He's going to sit behind everybody else. So you tell me, where's the fairness in that? So now kids can enter what's called a transfer portal. And they can move. Not only can they move, but they can get an NIL deal at the place they're going to pay them. And coaches now are losing their shit because they no longer have that control. They no longer have the control that they had before over these young men. These young men and these young ladies now have the ability to say, you know what? Keep giving me a reason to stay. Keep showing me that you want me here. See, back in the day, you didn't have to do that. You only had to recruit a kid once. You get them to go there, and they're there. Not no more. You got to recruit a kid for 4 years, if that's how long you want them. Because don't be mistaken, a four-year scholarship is not a four-year scholarship. It's 4 1-year scholarships. So they can yank your scholarship at any time. When kids say, oh, I got a full ride. No, you got a full ride that first year. And they're giving you the scholarship because they do believe you're going to be there all four or all three or all five. But they can't take your scholarship. And so now, like I said, kids can move. Coaches, especially college football coaches, they've lost a little bit of control. They have lost a little bit of control. And they don't like it. Because now not only can you recruit to your school, you know, and don't think for a minute these coaches don't know what NILs their players can get. They know they can move around and what they'll get paid. So a guy like Nick Saban, coach of Alabama, very successful, probably the best college coach of all time, doesn't like not having that control. So he says some things. Nick Saban said, and I quote, that players made about $3 million, and I quote, doing it the right way. When you say doing it the right way, you are basically saying somebody else is doing it the wrong way. Nick Saban took a shot at Jackson State, saying that the school paid Travis Hunter, a five-star prospect who flipped his commitment from Florida State and signed with the HBCU program during the early signing period in December, $1 million to join the program. Deion Sanders, head coach of Jackson State, said, no, that's not true. Not true at all. Now, Saban is out there now trying to apologize because he also said Texas A&M paid their players or, you know, offered more money to buy their players. Jimbo Fisher, head coach of Texas A&M, did not like that accusation. And I know we have a commercial break. We'll take it in a little bit. We never fought anybody. Fisher said, no rules are broken. Nothing was done wrong. It's a shame that you got to sit here and defend 17-year-old kids and families in Texas A&M because we do things right. We're always going to do things right. We're always going to be here. We're doing a heck of a job. He went on. It's despicable that a reputable head coach, Nick Saban, can come out and say this when he doesn't get his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen. It's ridiculous when he's not on top. All these college coaches know what the real deal is. And listen, let me tell you something. Paying athletes and the NIL has nothing to do with the way college football is played. Jackson State may go out and get one or two five-star athletes. One or two. Alabama will always get more. Georgia will always get more. Oklahoma will always get more. There is no balance in college football. There is no balance. Back in the day when they said players didn't get paid, which they did, you know that Alabama still got the best players. When Bobby Bowden was there, Florida State got the best players. For a while, Florida got the best players. It will always happen that way. And for whatever reason, we want to keep pretending like that hasn't happened. We always want to act like, oh, it's fair. Everything that's happened happens because there has to be a level of competitive balance. It's never been like that. Never. Never. I'm looking at the last few champions, and I'm not going to bore you with all of them, but I'm going to go back, and you stop me when you get to the middle school, the mid-level school, the school from the small conference that won a title. And we're going to count back from 2021. And I know it may seem boring, but I'm going to prove this point. And we're going to go backwards. Georgia, Bama, LSU, Clemson, Alabama, Clemson, Alabama, Alabama, Ohio State, Florida State, Alabama, Alabama, Auburn, Alabama, Florida, LSU, Florida, Texas, SC, SC, LSU, Ohio State, Miami, Florida, Oklahoma, Florida State, Tennessee, Michigan, Florida, Nebraska, Nebraska, Florida State, Alabama, Miami, Georgia Tech, Miami, Georgia Tech split with Colorado, Notre Dame, Miami, Penn State, Oklahoma. 1984 was the last time a team that was not in the Big Ten, the SEC, the ACC, or the Pac-12 did not win the football national title. That was the last time. And if I keep going back even further than that, and Notre Dame is a powerhouse, so don't pretend that they're not, I have to go back to 1976 to find Pittsburgh. And if I go even further than that, that's two since 1976. Two that didn't play in a big conference since 1976. I have to go back to 1960 to find a split where it was Minnesota. And guess what? They're still in the Big Ten. Still, you have to go back to the 40s to find teams like Army in split polls that won a national title. So miss me with that equal opportunity bullshit. It's not. The bigger programs have always succeeded. Oh, but Claude, that's not fair. Yeah, well, it's not. But it's the truth. And if you think paying players for their own image, for their own likeness, will change the landscape, you're out your mind. Well, Alabama can pay more than Troy. They always did. If you get your law degree from Harvard or you get your law degree from Eastern Illinois, which one is more prestigious? You can be just as good of a lawyer. You can be just as smart. You can do everything just as well. You pass your bar like they passed your bar, like they passed their bar. But it's not the same. So don't tell me if Alabama has more people willing to pay NIL or Texas A&M or Florida State or Ohio State or USC, that is going to change the landscape of Weber State, or it's going to change the landscape of Eastern Illinois, Southern Kentucky, Murray State. They're not going to get screwed more than they already have. Remember, people that have money and power will cry any argument they have so they continue to have the most money and power. If college football really cared about the student athletes, and they really cared about the financials of everything, every school, by NCAA rules, would have a cap on how much coaches could make. They would have a cap. No coach could make over $2 million. No side deals. No talk show deals. No Nike deals. No Under Armour deals. No nothing. Your salary is your salary. Students then would get in for a cheaper amount. All students pay $6 to get in all year. Money goes for equipment, goes for travel, goes for food tables. Nothing extra. Everyone would have plain jerseys. We wouldn't have alternate jerseys. You wouldn't have this jersey. You wouldn't have that jersey. No jerseys would be sold to fans with numbers, with only like a double zero on it, and students wouldn't be allowed, and student athletes would not be allowed to wear double zero on their jerseys, and they would only sell jerseys that had double zeros on, and all the proceeds would go back to the university to help fund the program or other school programs. Until they do that, cry foul. Nobody cares about that crap. Because it's not going to happen. I forget what coach it is, but just signed an extension for $9.5 million. But they want to talk about this coach or that coach here or this coach did that or that program has an advantage. They do. If your dad has a lot of money, your mom has a lot of money, guess what you have? An advantage. You'll probably go to a better school. You probably won't have to take a bus to school. You'll probably get dropped off. You probably won't eat the school lunch. You'll get the lunch that's made for you. You'll get Chick-fil-A 3 times a week, not once a month. There is a difference. The people with the money and the power will always try to keep the money and the power. What's happening to college football coaches now is the student athlete is showing, well, guess what? We have a little bit of power, too. You want me here for 3 years, coach? Keep proving you want me here for 3 years. Don't bring in a recruit to take my position when I'm a sophomore and I got another year left. Or if I'm a freshman, don't go out and recruit someone that can take my job because you know what? I'm leaving. Play your freshman. I'm out. I'll go somewhere else. Coaches don't like that. There's no saying, not fun when the rabbit gets to go. So the students are showing that they have some power too. Now, I'm not saying there should be a free fall. I'm not saying that. I think when you commit, you should commit. If things don't work out or someone lies to you, you should have the freedom to leave. It's not like you can enter the portal and transfer every year. You get one. But no one should tell you how much your NIL should be. No one should put a cap on your money. They don't put a cap on the coach's money. They don't put a cap on the AD's money. They don't put a cap on the university president's money. But now all of a sudden a lot of rich people believe that there should be a cap on what students make, student athletes make. If I am a nuclear physicist or wish to be one, and I get an intern over the summer, and they're telling me, hey, look, you can make a lot of money. Do I want someone telling me how much I can make in my summer job? Is there a cap on how much I can make in my summer job? If I rediscovered new fuel made out of apple juice and I get a check for $7 million, will the school tell me, oh, no, that's not fair? No, I get my check. And as long as that happens, you've got to remember power and money is trying to control the others. So let these coaches fight, let them bicker, let them talk about what's not fair, let them do all this, let them fight each other, let them give each other dirty looks. Remember, Nick Saban and Deion Sanders were doing commercials together. And now Nick is apologizing for using those two schools, those two people in his rant. It just goes to show you. Nick don't care. But neither does Fisher. Neither does Deion. They don't care what another coach thinks. They're going to do what they do to get their school where it needs to be so they can be more successful. And guess what happens when they're more successful? They get more money. And those, my friends, are the facts. So you can keep sitting in your room saying, it's not fair they get paid. Stop and think. It's a cave show, PLR.
Don't just smoke your cigar, enjoy your cigar at Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located at 4991 South Alma School. That's on the corner of Alma School in Chandler Heights. There's numerous TVs for viewing while you smoke your cigar, or better yet, become a club member and enjoy the member lounge. That's Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco.
You never know what you'll hear on The Cave Show.
Here's the bottom line. If people were having great sex, we'd have world peace.
You know, one day I was riding around with a friend, and the alarm on my watch went off. And I turned to my friend, and I said, "Hey, shut up, because I need to listen to The Cave Show with Pierre Law."
Welcome back to The Cave Show with PLR. This is PLR coming to you live from Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco. Remember, you're getting us live. You can get us as well on replay on Spotify and iHeartRadio. Just download those apps from the Apple App Store, Google Play Store, anywhere you get your apps from. Check us out there for sure. If you download those apps, also download The Cave Show. It's brought to you by The Sports Cave. That way, when we upload a new show, you can definitely check us out anywhere. Also on Casual Sports Radio Network. Again, download the app from the Apple Play Store. I call it the Apple Play Store, the Apple App Store, the Google Play Store, anywhere you get your apps. We're on replay at 3. Big announcement. Tomorrow, First Off, Best Off show. All next week, show will be at 3:30. Big time change, so I want everyone to know. We're usually on at 1. We will be on at 3:30. So make sure you're definitely checking us out. So it's new time for next week. New time for next week, 3:30, the live show. So last night, the Mavs played the Warriors in game one of the Western Conference Finals. And we're scheduled to have Gerald Bourguet on in about 3-4 minutes. Let me ask you a question. When your team loses to the Suns, team that you cover loses to the Suns, and you watch Spencer Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smith, Kleber, you watch all these guys hit threes like they have no conscience. I mean hitting everything. Everything. Just firing away with no thought, no whatever. It can be a late pass from Luka after he's dribbled the clock out. It's bulletin threes. Bronson doing whatever he wants, playing bully ball. All that stuff. And then they move on to the next series, and they shoot 11 of 48, 3 of 10 from Bull, 3 of 10 from Luka. And let's be honest, Luka got hot one game from Dort, because in games 4, 5, and 6, he was like 5 for 30. Maxi Kleber, 1 of 4. Bertans, 0 of 4. Spencer Dinwiddie, 3 of 7, the best shooter they had almost 50% in the game last night against the Warriors. 3 of 10 for Bullock. 1 of 3 for Dorian Finney-Smith. 0 of 5 for Jalen Brunson. All of a sudden, they're mortal again. It makes you stop and think, wait, hold up. Did they just dismantle us and kick our ass, or were we not good enough? Or was it something we were doing? What was it? And you know when Marquese Chris is in the game, someone's getting an ass kick. You're either kicking it or getting a kick. Dallas shot from the arc last night. Defensively, the Mavs did something that the Suns should have done. They turned the heat up on Luka. They made him bring the ball up. With press, with pressure, and they just rotated. Which keeps bringing me to the question. was Dallas just that good against the Suns? Or were the Suns just not good enough? So to answer that question, I got my guy on with me right now. He is the man, probably one of the best writers I know. Does a lot of good stuff. He's over at PHNX. Suns writer over there. He does their pod. He's close over there as well. Bring him in. It's my guy, Gerald Breguet. Gee, what's up, my man? How you feeling today?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for that introduction. You are far too kind.
Nah, man, I just like telling the truth. I'm a fact teller. I'm getting beat up for it, but that's okay. You've known me for a while, and, you know, I give it the way I feel it.
Absolutely, man. What are you getting beat up for today?
Okay, so today I've been pretty clear. I've been pretty okay because I haven't talked stuff yet. But I usually get beat up for ASU big time. I get beat up for ASU. I get told, are you sure you went to school there? Because, you know, I say stuff like the Las Vegas Bowl should be the ASU Invitational because we don't go to any other football bowl game, which, I mean, prove me wrong. 84, we're a middling Pac-12 football school because we're either 8-4 and 7-5. Again, where am I wrong? So I get beat up for that a lot. But lately I've been beat up because I said, I don't never believe that a team quits. But I do believe sometimes teams show they can't really take a punch, like a real punch. And that Mike Tyson quote, how everyone has a plan until they get hit in the mouth. And when Dallas came out in game 7, and when Luka hit those first two threes or had like 8 of the first 10 points, it seemed like someone just popped a balloon on the Suns, especially when they couldn't make a shot. And it's like the air went out. And I don't want to say they quit, but they almost looked defeated with 3 minutes gone in the game. And I don't know if that's just me, but what did you see, like those first 5 minutes? Did it tell you anything?
No, I completely agree. And I think a lot of it has to do with the level of pressure and expectations between two teams. Like, the Mavs were happy to be here. After the first two games, it felt like that was either going to be a sweep or a five-game series tops. Like, so for them to go back home, tie up the series, and then after game 5, they respond the way they do in game 6, like, anything can happen in the game 7. They had no pressure on them because they're the, you know, the young team. You know, they just added Spencer Dinwiddie. They've got these new pieces, first-year head coach with the team. Like, they were able to come out and just play loose with nothing to lose. The Suns had everything to lose. They're a 64-win team, like, best record in franchise history, set all these different winning streaks during the season. Like, they were the title favorites. They were supposed to win this series. And for whatever reason, when the playoffs started, they just completely lost the mojo that had gotten them through the season, that had made them the juggernaut that they were. And I think once they came out, I think they were hoping that someone was going to start making shots and take the pressure off everybody else. The crowd was going to get into it. They were going to blow them out just like they did in game 5. And when that didn't happen, like, dudes panicked. They were throwing up prayers, hoping they were going in. They were trying to draw fouls. And, like, when Luka came out calm, cool, and collected and hit his first 3 shots, like, yeah, the air went out of the building a little bit. And from there, it just spiraled. They couldn't score in that first half. Their offense was terrible. Like, it was just brutal to watch. And I honestly, you know, that's not the most heartbreaking Suns playoff loss, but it is the worst playoff loss I've ever seen this franchise endure, just because of the expectations, what was at stake, and just the level of execution and effort they wound up giving. It was, I'm going to spend all summer thinking about that game and wondering how the hell that happened.
So there's this quote from this movie, because I love movie quotes, and there was a quote from this movie called A Man Apart, where the bad guy says to the good guy, it was your arrogance that got you here. And so I started thinking about that with the Suns a little bit. Not that they're an arrogant team, per se, but they talk a lot of trash. And they get their little puts in, and they get their little shots in. And Monty is a very good coach, and he loves the system, and he sticks to it. But I said maybe they were a little bit too arrogant with their system, because some of the adjustments they made weren't really adjustments. Whereas Jason Kidd, after the first two games, really made some adjustments. And there's a video clip of him coaching the defense on a play, and I don't know if you saw it, but he's yelling, come up, trap in the corner, rotate. And you could see that that was something they didn't do in the first two games. Whereas I'm still watching Booker come off dribble handoffs, getting blitzed. I'm still seeing them pick up Chris 40 feet, and there's not another guard in there to bring the ball up to relieve his leg. I'm still seeing the same effort with DeAndre Ayton. I'm still watching Mikal not know how to shoot. Did Monty just get out-coached, and were the Suns a little bit arrogant, saying, this is what we do. It has always worked. We're just going to keep doing it and do it better.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. I think, you know, Monty is taking some flack for, you know, Jason Kidd made very visible, obvious adjustments, and they worked. And Monty made some adjustments, but it's hard to adjust when, you know, your secondary ball handler, the guy who's supposed to make defenses pay for when you double-team Devin Booker, was not himself. Like, whether that was because of the reported quad injury or something else, whatever it was, like, Chris Paul was not 100% himself. And when that happens,
no,
and your bench doesn't show up all postseason, like, your options dry up pretty quick in that regard. So I think Monty takes a little bit of unfair flack. He did not coach the best series. When you look at, you know, how willing they were to soft switch guys onto Luka Doncic, like, the Mavs repeatedly targeted Chris Paul on the defensive end. They switched him onto Luka Doncic, and they kind of had their way from there. And I don't understand why they were not fighting through those screens harder. You have the defensive player of the year runner-up on your team. He needs to be glued to Luka at all times, and they seem way too willing to concede those switches. But, like, other than that, it's hard to make up for it when, you know, campaign turns into a pumpkin, when Chris Paul is himself, when Book's being constantly double-teamed. Like, they just did not have the horses that they had during the regular season. It was weird. And you're right. I think they did what they've done all season, maybe a little bit too much. They could have tried different things because, you know, if things aren't working in a playoff series, it's hard to weigh, okay, how do we balance what got us here versus what we need to do right now? Like, at what point do we flip the switch and give up on, okay, what got us here isn't working right now. We need to try something new. And that's an unfortunate disadvantage of being a team that wins 64 games and looks absolutely unstoppable during the regular season. You tend to give guys too much leeway. You tend to trust what got you there maybe a little too much to a fault. And you're right. I think arrogance just for the players, for belief in what they've done to that point, I think it kind of it costs them in the end.
Online here with us on the Cave Show with PLR, my guy Gerald Bourdais, Suns writer for PHNX, is also the co-host on the PHNX pod. I'm going to ask you a question. It may seem unfair, or it may seem fair. I don't know. Does Devin, how hard of a superstar hit does Devin take? And I say that because I was one of the people that said he should have been a top four MVP voter. He was the best player on the best team all year. Chris was out. The ship never wavered. Everything went well. But closeout games, when they mean the most, that's when you kind of prove what you do and who you are. How much of a hit does he take for that game seven?
I think he takes a hit for it, and I think he takes a hit for game six as well, because that was a potential closeout game. And I think over those last two games, he shot something like 29% from the floor. He had 30 points total on 31 shots. He had like 12 turnovers to 5 assists in that two-game span. Like, he was bad in both closeout games, and it wasn't just game seven. I do think that because of the way that the season ended, because expectations were so high, that we're tending to be prisoners of the moment in terms of, you know, making this a referendum on who Devin Booker is. Like, I do think it matters, and I think we need to take a step back as far as, like, last year, Devin Booker was that dude. Like, we were looking at him as, like, a legitimate superstar, and I think he still is, but this year proved that he's not infallible, right? Like, he's not just necessarily this up-and-coming young player who could totally change the game with his playoff performances. I think we shouldn't lose sight of what he did last year. Like, he had 47 in a closeout game on the Lakers, 40-point triple-double in game one of the conference finals without Chris Paul, back-to-back 40-point finals games. Like, he's still that dude. I do think that he disappeared at the worst possible moment, and that he has to own up to that and use it to get better, because this was not his best series, and it was not the guy that, you know, is able to talk trash and get away with it anymore. You know, we all saw the Luka special clips and all that stuff. Like, he got shown up by a superstar, a legitimate superstar in the playoffs, and he's going to have to be better the next time that scenario presents itself.
You know, it's kind of funny because people will forget. And when we were in the media room before game seven, I remember talking to Dave King, and I said, you know what? I'm sorry. Luka shot 5-for-30 for his last, the last three games for his threes. So he can be defended. He can be guarded. He can be off.
Mm-hmm.
But what got me was, as I'm watching the game, the superstar showed up for game seven. And it reminded me of Magic Johnson. I know, here I go about old man stuff. But there was a finals where in the playoffs where Magic was called Tragic Johnson because of how poorly he played. No matter what he did that next year, it didn't matter. He could only redeem himself back in the finals. Do you think the Suns will get that opportunity again in the finals with Devin for him to redeem himself there? Because that's really what it's going to take almost. And I don't mean in our minds because we watch him play. We know what he does, but we also know there's a national media's buzz, and there's national media talk, and there's people that go, will it take a finals Devin Booker going off for him to redeem himself for this year?
Yeah, I think so. That's the unfortunate nature of the business. I think you look at every single superstar in the league, the way that they're measured is in titles, and it's unfortunate that that's the nature of this discourse, but you said it yourself with the Magic Johnson thing, like, people are just not satisfied. It's a what have you done for me lately league. It's a rings or bust league. And if Devin Booker wants to go down as that guy in Suns history, he's got to get them over the title hump. I don't know if it's next year because, you know, there are some obvious concerns about what this roster is going to look like at the start of next season. There are concerns about, you know, can Paul make it through an entire playoff run without getting hurt? And I think those are all valid. But, yeah, he's got to – the only thing that's going to take this type of slander away from the worst Game 7 in NBA history, not an exaggeration, is to win a title. And that's just the nature of the business. I don't think it's fair. I think you look at stars like Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, Giannis before he got over that hump, and you should marvel at what they're able to do, but instead we measure everything by rings. And when you talk as much crap as they do – and when you have this 64-win season that ends in the second round, like, yeah, there's some comeuppance for that. There needs to be ownership for that. And the slander is definitely going to continue until this team gets over the hump and proves that they are championship caliber.
Terrible game, Suns writer for PHNX. A couple more, and I'll let you get out of here. DeAndre Ayton. So we've covered DeAndre for a while. And there are games that DeAndre looks like, when you look at him, you're like, damn, this dude is so talented. He is 7 foot tall, agile, can do so many. And then there's so many things, and there are times you look at him, it's like, bro, are you here? Has he earned the right? And I'm going to say it like that. Has he earned the right for the Suns to feel we should give you the max and make you a centerpiece of what we're doing, or we should go out and explore trading you and maybe not getting a center as talented as you, but it'll be more a part of what we need him to do consistently night in and night out?
Honestly, Paul, I have no freaking idea. I am so torn on this. I feel like this conversation, the two sides are either, yes, he's definitely a max player, the Suns screwed up by not giving him a max, yada, 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 he should be a number one option, feed DA, all that crap. And then the other side is like, DA's a bum, they should trade him, like he doesn't want to be here, he quit on the team. And there's no in-between, and I don't understand how you can look at a player that's so inconsistent who has such high highs and such underwhelming mediums, let's say, and lean so far either way. I don't get it. Like, I think the Suns, after what he showed in the finals and the way that he sacrificed for the good of the team, should have gotten a max contract before the season started. But based on what we saw this season, he improved his game, he expanded it, and then in the playoffs, it didn't show up on a night-in, night-out basis like it did last year. The Suns suffered for it, and you could argue that he quit on them in Game 7 by not wanting to go back in the game. If Monty Williams is telling you you freaking quit on the team, as the reports are, like, that's pretty bad. And I get it. Like, you look, go back and watch that game. He didn't get his first shot attempt until about 8 minutes into the game. And their offense was floundering during that time. So I get the frustration, especially as a number one pick who didn't get his payday that he deserved, who sacrificed, who wanted to do more this season. Like, I totally get that. But he also got away from doing the things that made him so effective, that got him easy looks. He wasn't flashing hard. He wasn't screening and rolling with purpose. He wasn't crashing the offensive glass. So it's a double-edged sword. And I think you look at what the history of sign-in trades, right? And it's hard to get back a superstar return in a sign-in trade. So I think people need to temper their expectations when it comes to talking about that kind of thing. And I do think you're not going to find a one-on-one replacement that does what DA does on both ends of the floor. Like, he is a mobile big who can defend the perimeter when he's locked in. He does have an automatic hook shot and a really reliable mid-range game now. He just needs to learn how to dribble to, like, create his own offense a little bit. I am of the opinion that I think you let another team make an offer and match it because he is a restricted free agent, or you try to negotiate something. But I don't know if he did enough this season to prove he's worth the max if he wasn't last season. You know, like, I don't know if anything changed on that front, especially with the way that the season ended. But the good news is the Suns do have the power to match any deal if they so choose.
You know what I wish you would do, and this isn't the question, but the statement. I wish you would call up Akeem and say, you know what, I don't know what you do in the summer, but just give me a month, and I just want to work with you a month. I really do, because I think he has the footwork and he has the touch to, obviously I'm saying Akeem is one of the greats of all time, not be Akeem, but be Akeem-like. And I think what bothers me is there are times where you're 7 foot tall, man, you're 6 inches from the basket. Do not lay the ball up. Be hard. Without saying a word, because I don't want to use the words, because of my luck, like, my son is listening to the podcast. But in Chicago growing up, when certain guys were on the court, they may not have been as talented. They may have been super talented. But there was a word where we would say, that dude is a real MF, so I'm not going to say the word. But you know what I mean. And then there are dudes where you're like, nah, you ain't got to worry about him. He ain't no MF. He'll be all right. You get to him. Sometimes with DeAndre, and I think sometimes it's DNA. I think either you are a real MF, or you're not. Jimmy Butler, a clip just came on across where I'm at now. That's a real MF. I don't care where you catch him. If you're in a dark alley and I need a fight and I see him coming, I'm like, man, I'm glad you're on my side tonight. There's just certain guys that you just get that feeling about. And I don't know if DA has that. And I think it's unfair to think he ever will, but I think there's another level he can get to. Is that a bad statement or an off statement?
No, I think it's – I don't think you necessarily have to have that attitude, but I think it was glaring who has it and who doesn't when you watch him go against the guy that they should have taken with the number one pick in a playoff series, who shows up all of your superstars and your number one pick and sends you home with the process. The contrast was glaring there, and – again, I don't think DA necessarily has to have that attitude. They have Chris Paul and Devin Booker for that. But, yeah, he does have to be more aggressive. He does have to have an attitude when it comes to going up with the ball in the paint. And I think he does need to, like I said, work on his dribbling, because you look, you know, we hear all the time, oh, they just need to feed DA more, or he should be a bigger option on offense. The reason he's not a bigger option on offense is because he doesn't have the package for it right now. Like, he is most effective right now as a hard screen and roller, as a guy who is going to get that hook shot or be that release valve in the mid-range. Like, he's best around the basket. He doesn't have the ability to put the ball on the floor, even if it's one or two dribbles, and close the distance between where he's catching on the short roll and the low man who is sagging off of him trying to take the rim away. Like, he has to get better about that. He has to be able to attack when he catches the ball on the perimeter and guys are playing up into him and trying to disrupt the offense. Like, you have to be able to provide that. He doesn't have that right now. He doesn't have that shooting ability of a Karl Anthony Towns or a Nikola Jokic. He doesn't have their passing or their dribbling. Like, you have to refine those areas of your game if you want to be featured more prominently in this offense or any offense for that matter.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to let you go. Two teams you think will be in the finals? And what two teams do you like most watching that are left in the NBA playoffs?
Yeah, I think it'll probably be Celtics-Warriors. And I don't know, I think those are probably the two teams that I like watching the most. I want Dallas to do better. You look at the game last night, they got blown out, but they missed a lot of open threes, which was frustrating because they hit a ton of them. But I don't know if they have enough, especially if Luka's banged up like he looked with the shoulder. But I'm going with Celtics and Warriors.
I got the Heat and the Warriors. I've been talking nonstop about got to put some respect on the Heat name. And maybe it's because I'm still crying about Jimmy Butler leaving Chicago 5 years into it.
Yeah.
But that dude is just another guy in the playoffs, man. He's just another dude. He is a playoff guy. During the regular season, you wonder, but as soon as the lights get bright, he's that dude, and I will never bet against that. So I'm with you in the West, but in the East, there's something about Jimmy Butler, man. I may as well have a Jimmy Butler jersey. I just can't do it. But I'm with you either way. I think it'll be an entertaining finals. But yo, man, I appreciate you coming on. Always a wealth of knowledge. You're doing really good things over at PHNX, and I hear a lot of stuff, man. They're always good about it. I'm like, of course. That's my guy, G, man. He's even out of the suit and tie every day. The guy's wearing some shirts now. I don't look underdressed at every Suns game, so I'm loving it.
Thanks, man. I do appreciate that.
Tell everyone where they can check you out, please.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got the PHNX Suns podcast that we do five times a week. You can get that anywhere you get your podcasts. And then all my stuff is on gophnx.com. All my Suns articles are there.
All right, bro. Give me your Twitter because you're a good follow.
Oh, yeah. I'm on Twitter as well at Gerald Bourguet, GeraldBourguet.
All right, bro. I appreciate you, G, man. Have a rest, as good a week as you can get. Let's flush the Suns. Let's burn the tape. Enjoy some basketball and pick it up with some of it.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, brother. Take care now. That is my guy, the one and only Gerald Bourguet. Great follow. Like he said, follow him. Check him out. Really, really good stuff. Really good stuff. Before we get out of here, let me go ahead and set this up real quick. I am tired of the Miami Heat slander. Yes, I think Miami will beat Boston. Jimmy Butler is a difference maker. I know how good Jason Tatum is. I know he didn't have a good second half. I know their legs could be a problem. I know people are starting to say already, well, so-and-so is out, and so-and-so is hurt, and if they had this person, if they had that person, it would be a difference. Well, yeah, it would be. If Marcus Smart was there and Al Horford was there, it'd make a difference. Well, if Kyle Lowry was there, it'd make a difference for Miami. Put some respect on Miami's name, y'all. I'm just saying. They play tough defense. They get into you. They wear you out. They wear you down. They play defense. The culture is great. The atmosphere around there is great. They all buy in. They all pull when they need to pull. They all push when they need to push. So Miami and Golden State in the finals, I would probably give the edge to Golden State, but I'm not going to say anything until that gets there because I want to see who's there, who's healthy. They do have stars to match, and they don't just have stars in name. They have stars in productivity. But either way, basketball is fun. All right, everyone, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Maduros, for having us today like you do every single Thursday. It is always a pleasure to come over here. Don't forget they are located at 4991 South Alma School. Listen, one thing I want to tell you about cigars, don't just come in and walk into the humidor like you are Mr. or Miss Know-It-All. Ask. There's a great staff there that will help you pick the right cigar to fit. And then lastly, that last segment was brought to you by Scott and Seller, wine consultant Tina Calhoun, 602-410-4821. Tired of wines with sugars, additives, preservatives, all those things. Get your wine the right way, all natural, everything natural. Scott and Seller, wine consultant Tina Calhoun, 602-410-4821. Set up your wine tasting. You will definitely enjoy. All right, everyone, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Gerald McGay, for giving a call in. Don't forget, we are off mañana. It will be a best-of show. And then we're back next week, special time, all week, 3:30, right here on The Cave Show with TLR. Make sure you're following us, social media, at Sports Cave, Caves with K, on the Facebook, the Twitter, and the Instagram. You can get me directly on the Twitter as well, at TLR on Sports. Until Monday, let everyone be safe. Take care. Don't do crazy things. Take care of each other and try your best to be kind. My great grandmother used to always tell me it takes as much effort to be nice as it does to be a people. Be nice. This is the Cave Show with PLR. This is PLR Tips. Bring us home.